going to start the call this evening. And Hunter Allen, is, like I said, is a power meter training expert, and he's widely known as one of the top experts in the world in coaching endurance athletes using power meters. Hunter Allen's goal has always been to teach athletes how to maximize their training and racing potential through professional analysis of power data. Athletes that he's coached have been Jeremiah Bishop from Volkswagen Trek, and he was a U.S. champion mountain biker in 2008, Daniel Lloyd, who did very well in the 2008 Vuelta. Sue Haywood is a 2007 World Mountain Bike Champion. I could keep going on and on about all the great athletes that he's coached and helped rocket. And then lastly, Hunter himself is also a former professional cyclist for Team Navigators and has raced over 17 years in Europe, South America, USA, and Canada, and has over 40 career victories to his credit. So Hunter is extremely knowledgeable in the sport and in power meter training. With that, I welcome Hunter Allen to the call. How you doing, Hunter?
I'm doing great, Kerry. Thanks a lot, and I appreciate you having me on here. This is exciting.
Well, we're all very happy to have you on for sure. So let's start with the first question. Why don't you just give us a little bit of background on who you are and how you started with this power training craze, if you will.
All right. Well, thanks. Well, like you said, you know, I've been racing for a long time. I started racing when I was 11 and, you know, kind of went from BMX to mountain biking to road racing. And then really, once I started road racing, trying to figure out how to be the best athlete that I could be, and was always researching new things and trying to figure out how to be the best that I could be, and wanted to have a coach too, and there was no there were no coaches really in the late 80s and early 90s, and so when I retired from pro racing, then I had a few people who I was helping out, and then started coaching, and then that kind of blossomed from there. But you know, at the same time, the power right in the late 90s, the power meters just started. So I had some athletes who, you know, kind of in the early adopter phase, were asking about, hey, you know, what do you think about these power meters? Well, you know, are they worth it? Are they going to do anything? And you know, hey, would you train me with one if I buy one? And so I said, yeah, sure. You know, I'll figure it out. I can see what's going on. This looks like a perfect opportunity to kind of step in here and see what's up. So I started doing that with some athletes, and immediately just realized, like, oh my gosh, there's no way I'm going to be able to coach somebody and work with them until I understand personally what 300 watts means to me, you know, what 1,000 watts means, what 10 watts mean. I mean, I had no relationship with that because I had trained with heart rate for years and years and years and years and years, so didn't really know. And that really kind of got it started, because then that started moving us forward towards thinking about, you know, what were the things I really wanted to do as a coach, and how to get there, and understand what it means from a coaching perspective of this kind of dose and response relationship. So that kind of moved me forward a little bit, you know, in 2002, and started working on some software with a good buddy of mine, Kevin Williams, and we started to build Cycling Peak software. And so once we built Cycling Peak software and really became serious, then it made a lot of sense to continue to push that forward. And then that kind of spawned the book about, here's, you know, training and racing with a power meter and how do you do it step by step. And then, you know, seminars, webinars, and, you know, keep it on going, right?
yeah, definitely. So, all right. Did you want to keep on going?
Yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun, and you know, I think that, you know, certainly using a power meter has become more and more popular, and I think that is because it works. You know, it's like one of those things that fads are fads because they don't really add value. And so that's where this is truly different, and from a fad, and the fact that it's truly valuable and it works and people get stronger and they ride better, and so that makes a big difference too. So
awesome. Good deal. Can't argue with results for sure.
Exactly. All right.
Yeah, for sure. So what are the specific ways that triathletes can benefit from training with a power meter?
Good question. Triathletes are a unique breed, and the fact that they're doing three sports, that just continues to boggle my mind. But at the same time, you know, because I know how hard it is just to train for cycling, but I've coached many triathletes in the past and still do. And triathletes probably, in some ways, can benefit more from using a power meter than sometimes cyclists can, just purely cyclists, just because of the fact that it's about pacing, you know. And really, when I talk about this in my seminars and things as well, is you know, when you kind of get rid of all the tech stuff, when you kind of get rid of all the aerodynamic stuff and all of the hard training and everything, and like, what is the sport really about? You know, like, what is the sport about? And the sport of triathlon, the sport of cycling, the sport of running, the sport of swimming, it's about pacing. Like, it truly is a sport of pacing. And some people happen to like to do it on the bicycle. Some people happen to like to pace themselves swimming. Some people like to happen to pace themselves running. Some people like to do all three. And yeah. So when you kind of break it down and say, what is the, you know, raw nature of the sport, it's a sport of pacing. And so from the power meter perspective, you know, taking that pacing and figuring out your optimal pacing for each event as a triathlete, whether that's a sprint, whether that's Olympic, whether that's Ironman, or, you know, say you're just a time trialist, you're a cyclist, you just do 40K time trials or 10-mile time trials, you can figure out what your optimal pace is so that you finish with, you know, nothing left in the tank if you're just doing a time trial as a cyclist, or if you're a triathlete, you've got enough left in the tank to run 26 miles. And that's truly the key, is to say, oh, wow, here's kind of my pacing tool to make sure that I stay within a range that I know that gives me the best performance. And that's, I think that's what we're all after, is like trying to figure out, you know, how can I, you know, ride at the right pace so that I know I did my personal best. You know, it's like, well, oh, man, should I ride at 20 miles an hour? Should I ride at 16 miles an hour? Will I have enough left for the run? You know, I don't know. Those are always those questions in the back of your mind. And with a power meter, once you know some basic facts, boom, here's the number. Ride at this percentage of your what we call functional threshold power, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But yeah. then you're on it.
Good deal. And what I should have really started out with asking you is, what are the reasons why people should use a power meter more than anything?
Well, you know, there are a lot of reasons why, and like that, the pacing is one of them. One of the bigger ones, as a matter of fact. So that's an important thing. Two, it adds more meaning to heart rate monitoring. You know, your heart rate is just a measurement of really how fast your heart pumps. It doesn't measure how much work you're doing. You know, I've been on the start line of a lot of bicycle races, and just standing there with a heart rate of 160. So, you know, it doesn't really mean that much in terms of work. So it adds meaning to it, though. So it's still relevant, I think, is definitely important. Then, you know, the other thing is this idea of training with a dose and response system. So heart rate training is what we call response, where, okay, I want my heart rate to go to 180, and then your heart rate goes to 180. But what was the dose? What caused it to go to 180? Was it because you just sprinted up a hill? Was it because a dog started chasing you? Was it because a car came out in front of you? Was it because your buddy just attacked and you're trying to get on his wheel? Like, we don't know the dose. We just know that the heart rate responded. And with power, you understand the dose. Like, okay, I'm going to do 300 watts. I'm pushed down on my pedals. The number comes up on my power meter. There is 300 watts. The response is my heart rate goes to 180. My breathing increases, my VO2 max goes up, my rate of perceived exertion goes up, the lactate in my blood go up. All those things are responses to the training dose. So that's another big reason to me is the fact that now it's not this kind of unknown, ethereal, like, well, should I ride, 20 miles today or 40 miles today or 100 miles today? And because I rode 100 miles 2 weeks ago, does that mean I'm fitter today? And so you don't really have that understanding until you can measure the actual training dose. So those are three big ones anyway.
Cool. All right. Awesome. So why should athletes race with a power meter then?
Well, racing is definitely a key part of it, and another benefit of using a power meter because, one, back to that pacing idea and the fact that, okay, if you're in an Ironman or if you're in a half Ironman, you know exactly here's what I can do, and this will allow me to get to the finish line with enough in the tank to do the run and do it well. Two, the next thing you learn from racing is that we always do our best, almost 99.9% of the time, we do more in racing than we do in training. So we have some of our best numbers in races. And so that kind of lets us know some of our limits that we thought were limits in training really aren't our limits. Kind of break some of those barriers. Then the next thing that I think that we learn is from our failures. Some of the best data that you can possibly get, whether it's in a triathlon, whether it's in a criterium, whether it's in a time trial, whether you're in a breakaway in a road race, whatever that is when you fail, when you fall apart, when you bonk, when you get dropped out of the breakaway, when something goes wrong. Because then you can go back and you can analyze it and you can say, oh, wow, okay, here's what happened 10 minutes before, here's what happened 5 minutes before I got dropped, here's what happened, the minute before, here's what happened 10 minutes afterwards. And that's a really important thing because we can take those failures and then we learn from them. And then we change, our training. We change the things that we do. We maybe change our nutrition, or we change our tactics, or we change our strategies. So those things, I think, are truly, reasons to race with a power meter. And by all means, as far as I'm concerned, everybody who has a power meter should race with one. That's your best data.
Yeah, sure. All right, so what do pros exactly do when they train with power? How do they utilize it?
Well, the pros, it's interesting to think about this because, I enjoy car racing is one of my kind of, I love watching Formula One and, all the stuff that happens in Formula One. And one of the things that's really cool about cars is that we get these trickle-down factors or, trickle-down innovations or whatever, engineering, ideas and things that come from car racing come down in our normal cars. And same thing with, the NASA space, program trickle-down that comes down to us and we get to use them in our everyday life. But interestingly enough, with power meters, it's been a trickle-up. And so it's kind of funny because there are a lot of people out there who are relative beginners when compared to against, Tour de France athletes or Ironman, top 10 Ironman competitors that know way more about training with power than any of the pros do. So the pros are starting to become more and more educated about that now, and that's a big deal. So that's really up the level, I think, of pro racing. So when pros use them, right now, the best road pros, you see Lance riding with one. I mean, you see some Ferris also 10 riding with one. I mean, you see all these guys who are incredible athletes and women too, a lot of women actually, using them. Then they're using them in a couple of ways. One, they're using them to correctly dose themselves with the right training load. Okay, so they're defining their training load. They're trying to figure out, okay, I need to train in this training zone. I need to train this many miles or this much work, essentially. I need to do this much work. And then once they know their training load, they can then kind of optimize that training load, you know, making sure that they do just enough and not too much. You know, if you can win a race by, you know, training 10 hours a week, why would you want to train, you know, 15 hours a week if you can win it on 10 hours a week? It just makes more sense that way. So the second thing then is tracking that training load. And so once we know it, we can track it over time and then looking at trends and seeing, okay, you know, if I do this many training stress score points, and I'll talk about that in a minute, then you know, that's going to make me too tired to do the workout the next day. So kind of optimizing that is a real key part of it as well.
Good deal. Good deal. Awesome. And how do – well, actually, where can people get your stuff? Information, books?
Sure. You know, a couple different places. PeaksCoachingGroup.com is my coaching website. So PeaksCoachingGroup.com is my coaching website, and I've got a bunch of articles on there and a whole ton of different things on that site, and I do webinars, you know, as well. So that's a lot of fun. Like, I've got a coach webinar tomorrow night that is just for coaches, and I do those once a month, and I do athlete webinars once a month as well, just talking about power training, and then doing all, and everybody can see my screen and stuff, so that's a lot of fun. And then our software is on trainingpeaks.com. So trainingpeaks.com is a place to do that. Get those, and you can get my book, Training and Racing with a Power Meter, on my website. If you buy it off my website, I'll send you an autographed copy. it's a lot of fun.
Wicked. Good deal. Good deal. All right. So, how do you talk pro triathletes and use power meters?
So similar to, you know, I mean, the biggest thing to me is, again, back to this idea of pacing. So, and really metering out the training dose. So when I work with a very high-level pro woman for quite a few years, and we built her training around Ironman Wisconsin, and very difficult Ironman to do, very difficult one to train for because it's just so incredibly hilly. And so what we did was we first defined the demands of the event. So she was fortunate enough to be able to go out and pre-ride the entire course. So we went and she did it a couple of times, and we captured her power file from her pre-rides. So I knew, okay, how many hills there were, which is like seemingly endless, but you know, how many hills and how much power she did up the hills, what her power was when she was between hills, all that information. And so once I understood the demands of that event, then I was able to figure out the type of training that was needed to do well in it. So, you know, it's like, okay, gosh, you know, in 112 miles, you're going to have to do something like 70-some hills, you know, and when some hills are 20 seconds long, some are 2 minutes long, some are a minute long, some are 5 minutes long. And so then from that, we made sure that she did enough hill repeats, just so she could handle hill repeats, right? I mean, if you start to think about it and you look at your training plan, and all of a sudden you're like, 70 hill repeats? I'm going to do 70 hill repeats today?
Yeah.
No way, right?
Yeah.
But, like, that's what you're going to do when you go do Ironman Wisconsin. You're going to do 70 hill repeats or more. And so you have to be prepared for that. You know, you have to understand it. Like, that's part of the event. And then you have to figure out what your pace is up those hills, okay? So do you kill it on every hill? No, you can't kill it on every hill, because you're going to, you know, you won't have energy to run at the end. So you have to figure out the optimal pacing for the length of hills. So shorter hills, yeah, you go a little harder. Medium length hills, you kind of back it off a little bit. Longer hills, stuff that's 5 minutes long, that's done even at a lower intensity. So those are key parts of kind of using it as a pro. And I think for anybody, really. I mean, it's just defining the demands of the event. So once we define it, then we can train directly and specifically for it. And then once she's out there, she was out there on the course, then she used her power meter on her, handlebars to use it as a governor, like a ceiling. Okay, I can't go over 240 watts on this hill, or I can't go over 280 watts on this hill, or I can't go over 200 watts on this hill. And then that allowed her to kind of mentally check in and make sure that she was, not overexerting, but then also not underexerting as well. So, I mean, she did phenomenal. She ended up riding her very best Ironman, came out in like the second fastest bike split, came out, had one of the best runs, and was one of the top five women overall that year in the pro women. And it was like her second Ironman ever. So it was really fun to do and see how that works.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great stuff. So we were talking about this a little bit before. We just mentioned it briefly, or you just mentioned it, and that is, what is functional threshold power exactly?
Yeah. So functional threshold power, and this is something that Dr. Coggin and I kind of, we had to define for the book and for a bunch of articles we wrote, and we had to kind of come up with this because there's this whole threshold misunderstanding and, confusion around threshold. There's the anaerobic threshold. There's the ventilatory threshold. There's the lactate threshold. There's all these things that every exercise physiologist kind of comes up with. And, it's really confusing because you're like, well, I don't understand. What am I thinking about? What am I doing? What am I trying to do? Well, we just said, you know what? It's functional threshold power. It's power we're measuring, so it's threshold power. It's not lactate threshold. If we were measuring lactate in the blood, it'd be lactate threshold. It's threshold power. It's functional because the test is you go out and you crush it for an hour. You go as hard as you can for an hour. And whatever number you come up with, whether that's 210 watts, whether that's 330 watts, whether that's 420 watts for an hour, whatever it is, that is your functional threshold power. Now, you have to go as hard as you can. So it's not like one of these deals where you just sandbag and ride hard at the end, or you kind of, end up kind of coasting along and looking at the trees and stuff and going, wow, that's a really nice house. You have to really kill it. You have to go for it. And that's tough. So a lot of times I'll have clients who, if they've never done an hour time trial before, if they've never done that, then we can do a shorter test and take about 5% off. So you can also do a 20-minute test. So 20-minute as hard as you can go, and then subtract about 5% from that number, and that should be very close to the number that you'll get if you did an hour time trial. Sometimes it's higher, sometimes it's a little lower, but 5% is pretty darn close. So that's really what we talk about when we talk about functional threshold power.
All right, good deal. So if someone's out there and they're using power when they're training, what exactly are they looking at and trying to hone in?
Sure. I think that when you're out there in training and you're doing your ride, you come back to what's the purpose of my ride. If the purpose of your ride is just to ride an endurance pace and go out there and get in 4 or 5 hours and just build your endurance, then you're using your power meter as that kind of governor, and say, okay, don't go above a certain number. And maybe for you that might be 200 watts, or for whoever, whatever that is. And we say, you know what, I spend most of the day under 200 watts, you know, and not down at 100 watts, but at 200 watts. So I know that I'm in the endurance training zone. So that's a key element of it, is learning your training zones. And back to that functional threshold power thing, that's what we call 100%, okay? So you've given 100% around functional threshold power. Then the training zones or training levels are defined around that 100%. So underneath that threshold, we have what's called tempo pace. And tempo pace is between 76 and 90% of your threshold power, okay? Underneath that, we have endurance pace, which is 56 to 75% of threshold power. And then anything underneath 56% of threshold power, that's what we call active recovery, riding very easily. Now, above it, on the other side of it, so threshold, you're training your threshold essentially when you're between 91 and 105% of functional threshold power. Above it, then you can train your VO2 max, and that's between 106 to 120%. Then we have what's called anaerobic capacity, and that's 120 to 150% or more. And then we have what's called neuromuscular power, which is level 7 or training zone 7, which is your best maximal effort, like a sprint. So the key to training optimally here is understanding, what's my goal? You know, am I trying to improve my threshold? Am I trying to improve my VO2 max? Okay, I'm getting ready for a short criterium. Maybe I'm going to need to really improve my sprint. Or maybe I'm doing a half Ironman, so that's mainly going to be threshold and tempo pace. So once you know your goal, then you train predominantly in that zone, in that area. So it's like, okay, if I'm getting ready for a half Ironman, I've got to ride 56 miles, then I know that most of the time I'm going to be riding at what we call upper tempo pace. So probably around the 80 to 85% of threshold power. So then you do intervals that are a little bit harder than that. You do intervals at 90%. You do intervals at 100%, you know, in order to really increase your threshold power. So then all of a sudden the old 80%, you know, which may have been only 200 watts, now is 230 watts, and that's 80% of your functional threshold power. So I don't know if that's too confusing. There's a lot of numbers there. I'm reciting.
No, it makes sense, definitely.
Hopefully that makes sense.
No, in a lot of ways, it's almost like using a heart rate monitor. It's kind of broken down the same way, except, you know, obviously there's pluses and minuses to that. So.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and like, you know, we have training zones with heart rate, and so those correlate to power training zones as well. So, like, for example, you know, the threshold power, 91 to 105%, if you did threshold heart rate, okay? So a lot of times we, you know, training zones are built on max heart rate. You can, if you look at threshold heart rate, we're kind of talking apples to apples, then we can say, okay, 95 to 105% of threshold heart rate, and 95 to 105 is almost identical to 91 to 105. Now, you got to know what 100% of threshold heart rate is as well. So those kind of heart rate zones are part of them, and we certainly look at that. The problem with heart rate when you go out and train, especially on longer days or hotter days, towards the end you get what's called cardiac drift. And so all of a sudden it's like, okay, you know, I'm doing 200 watts. When I did 200 watts at the beginning of the ride, my heart rate was 130. Now I'm doing 200 watts, my heart rate's 140. You know, or maybe I'm going really hard and I'm doing 300 watts at the beginning, my heart rate's 170. Now I do 300 watts, my heart rate's 180. So you're still training with the same dose. Now your heart's having to pump faster in order to get that same workload. So that's where that kind of disconnect happens, and you have to be careful with heart rate.
Sure, sure. Okay. And what about intensity factor? What exactly is that, and why is it important with training with power?
Yeah. So when we probably ought to back up a little bit and talk a little bit about intensity before we get to intensity factor, and this will be a good setup
for it.
So part of this idea of training with power is that training stress score, and I needed a score. Like, I went to Dr. Coggin. Coggin is an incredibly brilliant guy, amazingly smart, and I said,
yeah,
hey, you know what? I need a score. I need a score for every ride that I do or one of my athletes does. We got this power meter. It measures, it records every second. It measures our work. We got to be able to come up with a score for this, for each ride. And so 2 weeks later comes back, Eureka, I've got it. It's going to be called training stress score, and it's based on functional threshold power. So, and the more point, you get more points as you approach functional threshold power, and then once you go past it, you get even more points in kind of an exponential way. Now, when we came up with this training stress score, because I looked at, I wanted to periodize training for my athletes, not by hours. You know, because here where I live in Virginia in the mountains, 3-hour bike ride, you might go 40 miles.
Yeah.
You know, versus on the east coast of Virginia where it's absolutely dead flat, you know, you might, in 3 hours, you could go 70 miles, maybe 80. And so completely different. And so mileage and hours didn't really work. Like, it didn't really make sense in terms of how far to ride or how hard to ride. Then we do measure work in a power meter as well, and that's measured as kilojoules. So a joule is a watt per second, and we can measure kilojoules and how much work we've done. So then, but the problem with kilojoules is it doesn't take into account intensity. Okay, so same thing with miles and hours, doesn't take into account intensity. Right? And so kilojoules are the same thing. I can go and do a 3,000 kilojoule ride, and I can do it in 10 hours and ride really slow. Or I can do a 3,000 kilojoule ride in about 3.5 hours and be killing it the whole time and be shattered at the end. Now, completely different energy systems that you train. So when Training Stress Core came out, we had to have a way to calculate intensity. And that's what intensity factor is. So intensity factor goes from, it's a decimal, so from, 0.01 all the way up to, 1.8 or 9 or something like that or higher. And what it says, okay, 1.0 is functional threshold power. 0.83 means 83%, essentially, of your functional threshold power. So if I go out and do a training stress score ride, so back to training stress score just for a sec here. When you do an hour at functional threshold power, you get 100 points. That's the gold standard. You do a 40K time trial, essentially. Hard as you can go, you get 100 points. Your intensity factor is 1.0. All right, and that's the key, is that you know where you get 100 points and you get an intensity of 1.0. So then you're now calculating the dose. I'm getting a score for this ride. I'm going to go out and I'm going to do a 4-hour ride, and I'm going to get in all these intervals and stuff, and I come back and my training stress score was 250 points. My intensity factor was 0.75. So that means that I did the equivalent training stress of 2.5 back-to-back 40-kilometer time trials, all right? But I won't be as sore as if I did that back-to-back because I did it at an intensity of 0.75 or 75% of my functional threshold power, okay? So you still get the same training stress, but maybe not the same soreness and such like that. So that's part of intensity factor. And as a corollary to that, we have this other idea called normalized power. So normalized power is this way of taking into consideration how the body feels and how the body felt and how many watts the body felt like it did. So, you know, because power, you know, if you go over a hill, maybe you're going up the hill at 350 watts, you go over the top of the hill, you're pedaling not at all, and then you go down to the bottom and then you're on the flat and now you're pedaling 200 watts, and then you go back up another hill, you know, within 10 seconds or 15 seconds, straight up another one, and you do 500 watts up that. That may be a span of 2 minutes. Well, if you average all the numbers, you got zeros when you weren't pedaling, 450 watts when you're going hard, all these numbers together, it may say, well, the average is only 120. But, man, you killed it up those hills. You know, you went really hard. It doesn't make sense. Well, I mean, that's not what my body felt like. And it really isn't. So Dr. Coggan, again, came up with this idea called normalized power. It takes into account what the body feels. And so I says, well, your normalized power might have been 320 watts for that two-minute period of time because of the hard hills, the short recovery, and the hard hill again. So normalized power is a key part of intensity factor and training stress score as well.
Cool. Very interesting. All very useful numbers for sure. All right. So you're recognized as one of the power training experts in the world. So what do you think is the holy grail of coaching with a power meter?
To me, it's this idea that really when I started coaching, I wanted to be able to I can get anybody fit, right? I mean, as a coach, that's easy. You know, here's a training plan, do the training plan, you get fit. And, you know, that's not hard. But what is hard is having the athlete as fit as they possibly can be on the day they want to be. That's tough. That is not an easy thing, you know, because, I mean, that's part of it. I want to make sure that, you know, darn it, on September 8th when I go do Ironman Wisconsin or whatever it is this year, I'm going to be at my peak of fitness. So to me, that's kind of the holy grail of coaching and training with a power meter, is that you can use the power meter to predict and create the best peak of fitness that you've ever had. And, you know, if for everybody out there who watches Versus and the race, the bike races, and Phil and Paul on TV and listening to their things, they talk about the mythical form. Oh, you know, Tom Boonen's got great form, or, you know, this guy's got great form, or that guy's got great form, or whatever it is. And, you know, like, it's like this nebulous, ethereal, kind of mystical concept, or, you know, somebody waves a magic wand over these pro cyclists and they get form, you know?
Yeah.
And it may even seem like that, and definitely seem like that for a lot of them. Like, oh, well, I don't understand it, but, man, I got it, and I'm killing everybody. But really, this form is kind of two components. And, I sat down a couple of years ago with one of my heroes, Greg LeMond, for a couple of days, and we just, one of my dream come true is spend 2 days with Greg LeMond and talk about training, you know. So we spent a couple of days just chatting about training and it was outstanding because I said, you know, hey, I said, man, I got to ask you, Greg, you know, when you won the Tour de France, man, was it like, what was it like? Were you on form before? He's like, oh, man, I was flying. I was killing it. I was just crushing everybody. I was riding great, and I was just on form, totally flying. And I said, well, what about, you know, at the end of the Tour de France? Were you on form then? He's like, well, I'm pretty tired, you know.
Yeah.
But I was better
than
everybody else.
Yeah.
But, you know, I said, okay, so when you're tired, you don't have form. He's like, no, you're so fatigued, you don't really have form then. before the race, you do have form because you're fresh. So, you know, at the end of the Tour de France, you may be super fit, but tired, so you're not really on form. Where vice versa, let's say if you just sat on the couch for a couple of months and then raced in the Tour de France, you wouldn't be on form either because you're not very fit, but you're really fresh.
Yeah.
They got to have the two, where you have fitness plus freshness. And that's a key part of it. So that's what form is. Fitness plus freshness is form. And so balancing those two things is what every good coach does with their athletes, and that is key. So that, okay, I want to be not only as absolutely fit as I can on September 8th, but I also want to have just the right amount of freshness to make sure that I'm not going into it too tired, and I'm also not going into it too rested and have even lost fitness. So that balance is really a key part of it. And that truly, I think, is the holy grail of coaching, is understanding this kind of fitness plus freshness equals form, using your power meter to understand how those things work. And in our software, in the Training Peaks WKO Plus software, the WKO Plus software is the power meter software that I co-developed, and we have a chart in there called the Performance Manager Chart. And that's what that chart does, and that's the chart that allows us to balance fitness and freshness based on your power meter files. And so it's like, you know, if all you ever did was just ride your bike and collect power data, and you didn't even look at your power meter file, I could tell you where your form was at any time. Just because it measures your training stress, and it measures how you respond to that training stress. And I could, you know, wave my magic wand over my computer and tell you all kinds of crazy metrics about yourself and what you're feeling and how you're riding at any time during the year, just because you are getting the data about how your body was responding to the training stress. So that's really the holy grail of, you know, peak your athlete when you want to peak them.
Yeah. Right on. And so with all these numbers and things like that, are you getting pretty good at doing that now? or how much of it is like, do you ever have times where you get all the numbers, everything lines up, but for whatever reason with that athlete, it just doesn't work out, and there's other things that you have to adjust for them, or, you know, whatever?
Sure. I mean, life happens, right?
Yeah.
Life happens. And that's stuff we can't account for. You've got one of your athletes, you spent a year building up to the right form, and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, they find out their wife's cheating on them, you know. The best form of their life goes out the door, you know.
Yeah.
Or they get fired from their job, or something, you know, traumatic happens. So life happens. Can't account for that kind of stuff. We can account for recovery time, okay? So a typical athlete who is, let's say, an older athlete, 55 or older, is going to recover, well, even 50-year-old athletes and even some 40-year-old athletes, you know, recover a little more slowly than the 20-year-old ones do. And so we can account for that recovery, and so we can adjust for it. So that's a key part of understanding, you know, how that whole system works. Then the other thing that, is a challenge as well is finding out what the optimal taper period is. And each athlete tapers a little bit differently and responds to the taper a little bit differently. So the performance manager really helps you get close to that, and you can kind of do some practice tapers leading up to your key event so that you can understand, oh, wow, you know, if I taper, you know, for 2 weeks beforehand, man, I'm like, you know, stale. I'm really fresh, but I'm really stale. Well, if I only taper 3 days before, I'm not quite recovered yet. So definitely kind of think about those things in consideration here. But on the whole, I mean, you know, Carrie, it's pretty darn amazing. It's pretty incredible. Like, I've got a guy right now that I'm coaching on the Cervelo test team tomorrow. He's racing in Flesh Balloon, Dan Fleeman. And, you know, we've got his training dialed in, you know, and he goes into Flesh Balloon tomorrow not quite in balance. So what we mean is neither fresh nor rested, or neither fresh nor fatigued. He's going to be just a hair fatigued. But his peak is next week for the Tour of Romandy. He wants to really ride well for the Tour of Romandy, which is a very good race and lots of climbing, which he's a good climber for. So when we go to the Tour of Romandy, he's going to be much fresher, where he'll be a positive 15 points, what we call training stress balance. So he'll be fresh and when he gets to that stage race, because, you know, by the end of the race, he'll be what we call, you know, negative in that. So he'll probably be about negative 45 training stress balance points at the end of the race. And, you know, when you've got it nailed with an athlete, you got it nailed. It'll be fun to see how he does. I'm sure he'll do really well. But he's, you know, it's fun to work out.
Awesome. Good deal. And where can people get your stuff again?
So, again, at peakscoachinggroup.com, I've got a lot of free articles there. I do webinars, athlete webinars every month. I have a subscription to webinars. I have coaches, so any coaches listening, I have great resources there. You can even get continuing education credits by listening to my webinars. And then I also, you can get my book there, Training and Racing with the Power Meter, and I'll autograph it for you. And then our software is on trainingpeaks.com. So trainingpeaks.com, and the power analysis software is called WKO Plus. And that's short for workout. So workout, WKO Plus. So, yep.
Cool. Now, so there's all kinds of awesome, you know, different training tools coming out there. You know, you get heart rate monitors, you got power rate meters and all that stuff. And so we're getting a lot of good information out there, and you know, GPS is allowing us to do things with running as well now, and all kinds of other stuff. So what do you see in terms of the future with training with power and all this new technology, and what are some of the things that are going to be happening out there, do you think?
Yep. Well, you know, there's a couple of new things on the horizon. Well, I definitely think GPS is an untapped tool. Right now, GPS is just more of a toy than it really is a tool yet. I'm working on some things that's going to change that. So the beauty of a bunch of these new power meters are the fact that they talk a common language, and which is called ANT Plus, A-N-T Plus, so that a power meter, you can buy a power meter like a power tap, ANT Plus, and have a Garmin 705 head unit. Or you can buy a SRM and have a Garmin 705. So they talk all the same language, so it kind of divorces the power meter from the actual head unit itself. So I've got some things in the pike coming down here for GPS that when you have GPS mated to your power file is going to be very useful. So I'm really looking forward to some upcoming features that we've got coming out in our next version of WKO Plus. And so GPS is one of them, in understanding, you know, what made your race even better. You know, sometimes it's not more power. Sometimes that's not the answer. Sometimes sometimes other things are factors, and GPS can help us with figuring those out. So that's going to be fun to look at. The other thing that is going to be interesting, too, is there's this, and it's in my book, we did a little bit on it, called quadrant analysis. And quadrant analysis is this idea of, it's not only just 300 watts, but, you know, when you produce power, it's you know, how hard you pedal times how fast you're pedaling.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a simple equation, but you can produce 300 watts if you pedal really fast in a tiny little itty-bitty gear. Now, if you pedal really fast in a tiny little itty-bitty gear to do 300 watts, that recruits a different type of muscle, you know, than if you push a really big gear, like let's say 55-11, really slowly to produce 300 watts. And that's a different type of muscle fiber that does that. The 300 watts number is the same, but the type of muscle fibers are different. And so I talk a little bit about this in the book, Training and Racing with a Power Meter. Quadrant analysis helps us understand that. So I've got some new things coming out with quadrant analysis that I think is really going to open some people's eyes about training specifically for the demands of their event. So kind of back to that idea of training specifically for the demands of your event. You know, if you're a mountain biker and, you know, you have a very specific muscular demand in mountain biking, but if you do all your training on the road, that's a completely different muscular demand. So you have to not only train the wattage, but you have to also train the muscular demand as well. So that's, I think, going to be exciting to see as we come out with some new tools for that and open some people's eyes there. The last thing that I find interesting is there's a power meter out there called the iAero or iBike, and these guys are they essentially have kind of a poor man's wind tunnel. They have the ability on their power meters now to measure real time coefficient of drag. And that means that, you know, you can optimize your aerodynamic position without going to a wind tunnel and doing some tests. I mean, it takes a little bit of engineering and a little bit of, you know, homework there and figuring out some of the stuff behind the scenes, but it's not hard. And you know, it's pretty darn sweet when you're riding your bike out there and all of a sudden you bring your arms in a little closer on your tri-bars, or you flatten your back a little bit more, or you tip your aero helmet back a little bit more, and you see the coefficient of drag numbers go down right there on the screen, like, bam, going down right now. That's cool. So they've, you know, you've got to have a power meter that talks this ANT plus again to talk to the iAero to get these numbers. But once you got them, and then you can do stuff with it. So it's some fun stuff. You know, one of my wish list things is I want respiration rate on my heart rate strap. You know, I don't know if we're going to learn much from it, but why the heck don't we have respiration rate on our heart rate straps? I don't know. We got a strap around our chest. The thing should be able to measure respiration rate. So, anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure it's coming. Good deal. Yep. All right, we got a few people here on the webcast asking a few questions. Would you like to take a crack at a few?
Sure.
All right, let's see. We got Greg Woods from Stoughton, and he says, I am training for Ironman Wisconsin and want to know how to train with the power tap to improve endurance and power for those long, hard miles. Thanks, Greg, which we actually kind of talked a little bit about.
Yep. And so, Greg, one of the key parts of Ironman Wisconsin is the fact that the hills are relentless. So you have to prepare for the hills, and you have to make a pacing. All right, so you need one key component of learning and doing well at Ironman Wisconsin is judging how long the hills are by looking at them. So, you know, if you don't live near there and you can't pre-ride it, no problem, but hopefully you do live in an area where there are some hills. And I tell you what I'd do. I'd go out on a route. I'd go out on a loop, and at the bottom of each hill, say to yourself, that's a minute and a half hill. That's a 2 minute and 30 second hill. That's a 47 second hill. You know, just play some games and figure out, see how, and then time your hills. Watch your stopwatch, put a stopwatch on your handlebar for easy, you know, hitting it, and then go up the hills and then see how close you are to figuring out how long the hills are. The reason that is because when you get out there in Ironman, Wisconsin, you've got all these hills, and you need to be able to look at that hill and you say, that's a 2 minute hill. Okay. 2 minute hill, my pacing guideline is I can only be at 105% of my threshold power. All right. So once you can sight the hills and you can see how long they are, then you come back to your pacing guidelines. And that's key, because then all of a sudden it's like, oh wow, you know, here's how I'm doing. I'm getting ready for this hill, you know. The other key part of training for Ironman Wisconsin is you're going to have to do anaerobic capacity work. It's the one Ironman out there that demands anaerobic capacity. Anaerobic capacity is the ability to go hard for 30 seconds to 2 minutes and recover quickly. Most Ironmans, you don't have to do this for, because you never have these really hard, short efforts. Ironman in Wisconsin, you do. So you do have to do 2 minute repeats, minute repeats, minute and a half repeats, 30 second repeats. So you have to train your anaerobic capacity along with, you know, your tempo pace, your threshold pace. Those are key, but those are a couple key tips for you there, Greg.
Cool. Awesome stuff. We got Tula from New Jersey, and wants to know, I am a runner and new to cycling, preparing for my first triathlon sprint. What key advice would you give me or anyone on starting out?
Okay. So when you make the transition from running into cycling, the biggest thing that you can do besides just getting the technical aspects of riding your bicycle dialed in, the biggest thing that you can do is, again, coming back to this idea of how hard can I go and still run, okay? So you know how hard you can go when you're running, and you know how to pace yourself running, but how do you pace yourself on the bike and then still run? So for runners coming into the sport, you know, they tend to be cardiovascularly fit, so they need to improve some of their cycling muscles. But then the next thing they really need to do is they need to do a lot of bricks, right? You know, bike, run, ick. And it's like, okay, go out and you do 30 miles on your bike as hard as you can, get off, run a 10K. See if you can do it, you know. See if it's even possible. See if you can pace yourself well enough to do it. If you can't run, you know that you went too hard on the bike. So pacing is a critical component. And if you have a power meter, then that helps you even further kind of figure out the pacing strategy for it. In my book, Training and Racing a Power Meter, I have a section on the paces, the percent of threshold you should hold for certain distances in an Ironman or a half Ironman or Olympic distance. So if you're thinking about a power meter, that might be a good reference for you as well.
Good deal, good deal. Bill from Calgary asks, if you're already on Training Peaks, how will WKO help the average athlete?
So if you're already using Training Peaks from just the online version and you know, logging your data or uploading your nutrition or uploading your power files, WKO is the kind of the premier power analysis software. And what it really does is it helps you to better analyze the individual file, okay, so that file and how many intervals you did and what, you know, were you in the right zone and how much percent of drop-off of power you had from one to another, those types of things. And then also looking at it from that bigger perspective and looking at it from a place of, well, you know, gosh, is my five-minute power really improving? And seeing, you know, what we call mean maximal power, mean being average, maximal being best, you know, mean maximal power over time. So looking at it over time is critical. And then lastly, back to the old performance manager chart there, looking at it and saying, okay, where is my training stress balance? Where is my, you know, fitness right now, my chronic training load? What is that, you know, and thinking about it from that perspective. So those things are make a big difference, and it really kind of takes it to the next level.
All right, and then we got Richard in Sweetwater, and he wants to know, how would I adjust WKO for my age of 44?
Okay, so in WKO, the one thing that you need to probably adjust is the performance manager chart itself. So there is a setting, if you go on the performance manager chart, under options, and then customize this chart, and then under that there is a there's a little setting in there called ATL. So ATL constant needs to be changed. It's defaulted at 7 days, and so there's a number 7 there for ATL. Then you're going to change that number down if you think you recover faster than normal than your peers, or you lengthen it a little bit. Maybe you might want to put it out at 9 days. 44, it depends on how long you've been training. You know, if you've been training for a long time, then, you know, 7 might not be too bad. It might be dead on. Now, if you're new to endurance sports, you might move it out to 9 until you kind of get your recovery system online, really, so to speak. So, something like that. So options, customize this chart, and then the ATL constant. ATL stands for acute training load. Tells us how quickly we recover from a short, hard effort. And so that's it.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I think that's it. And Hunter, where can people get your stuff again? Where's a good place to go?
Sure. A lot of articles, my coaching. I've got a bunch of coaches that help me out, peakscoachinggroup.com. And, I do webinars on this all the time, once a month. And I even have past webinars on here, too. So if this kind of intrigues you and you're thinking about it, you can go to peakscoachinggroup.com, click on webinars. I've got all these past webinars you can buy, download, watch them on demand, just like DirecTV.
Good deal.
Buy them from your home. And then trainingpeaks.com is where our software is, and WKO Plus is our software. So go check that out. And then, again, get a copy of my book, Training and Racing the Power Meter. I'll send you an autographed copy if you buy it right off the peakscoachinggroup.com.
Great. Well, Hunter, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all your knowledge with us tonight.
No, Kerry, great to have be a part of this, and thanks a lot. And it's an honor to be here, and glad to do it.
Awesome. Well, everyone, that is the end of tonight's call. We will see you next week, and that's basically it. Everyone, have a good night. Bye bye.